This week we will continue our study of the Kings and Chronicles by considering the reigns of two kings whose reigns very nearly coincided. These are Pekah, son of Remaliah, king of the northern kingdom of Israel, and Jotham, son of Uzziah, king of the southern kingdom of Judah. Pekah took over as king of Israel in the year that Uzziah of Judah died. You may recall from a few weeks ago, see our message, Chaos Reigns in Israel Again, that Pekah had been a military leader who seized the throne of Israel by killing King Pekahiah, who came before him. Pekah will have another of those evil and disastrous reigns, which is so characteristic of the kings of Israel. We'll see a great contrast in Judah, where Jotham took over for his father Uzziah. Jotham followed God, and thus he had a successful reign. We find the records of these two kings in 2 Kings 15:27-38, which is your recommended reading, and also supplementary information for Jotham in 2 Chronicles 27. If you have not read 2 Kings 15:27-38, I recommend that you pause and do so now. Let's start with Pekah. He became king in the 52nd and final year of King Uzziah, whom today's passage calls by his alternate name Azariah. This was the same year that Isaiah received his prophetic commission, as you will recall from last week's message on Isaiah chapter 6. This, by my count, was the 196th year after the split between Israel and Judah. Pekah would reign for 20 years after that, from 196 to 216 post-split. We note that 2 Kings 15:30 calls the year that Pekah died the 20th year of Jotham, the son of Uzziah. That is a bit of a misnomer, since Jotham was not on the throne for 20 years, as this very chapter also indicates. However, the number is accurate because Jotham took the throne in Judah shortly after Pekah did. There isn't much to say about Pekah, and we start with the obvious. He was yet another evil king of Israel. He followed after the sins of Jeroboam, son of Nebat, just like all the other evil kings of Israel who came before him. This was yet another recipe for disaster. Pekah's 20-year reign was characterized by war. We note in 2 Kings 15:37 that he made war against Judah. We don't have any further details about that, but I think we are safe to presume, given the context of Jotham's mighty reign and Pekah's faltering one, that Pekah's attacks on Judah were unsuccessful. More importantly, from 2 Kings 15:29, Tiglath-Pileser, king of Assyria, attacked Israel and was very successful in doing so. Tiglath-Pileser conquered a large chunk of the north and east of Israel. Today's passage tells us that he took Gilead, which is the broad designation for the region east of the Jordan. That's a huge area to lose, but it is also one which often went in and out of Israel's control. You can see that in the constant warring with the Arameans, most famously at Ramoth-Gilead under kings like Ahab and Joram. But Tiglath-Pileser also crossed the Jordan, where he took the tribe of Naphtali. On our map, the borders of Naphtali extend south all along the edge of the Jordan, though other maps tend to disagree with that. Without question, though, the tribe of Naphtali possessed the lands of Israel's northeast around the Sea of Galilee. The tribe of Naphtali also encompassed the cities listed, Abel Beth Makkah, Genoa, Kadesh, and Hazor. Ijon is slightly north of the borders assigned by Joshua, but it is often listed as a city of Israel, which would be in Naphtali's territory. See, for example, 1 Kings 15:20. So the description given, listing off a number of cities and the Sea of Galilee, is a little redundant. It would have been effective to just say that Tiglath-Pileser had taken Gilead and Naphtali and leave it at that. This was a big loss, representing some 20-30% of Israel's total area by my rough estimate. In these conquests, the Assyrians brought Israelite captives to Assyria as slaves. This, in the first place, is particularly odious, both to us in modern times and also to the Israelites. The escape from slavery in Egypt is foundational to their history, and they highly valued personal liberty. But in the second place, this is a foreboding omen of things to come. By this point, Israel was no more than 30 years away from falling entirely before the Assyrian Empire. But hold on to that thought. The fall of Samaria won't come until the next king. Despite his wickedness, Pekah had a relatively long reign for a king of Israel. The average Israelite king lasted for 12 years, both by mean and median measurements, but the modal length of a reign was only 2 years. Pekah was Israel's sixth longest reigning king. But after 20 years, he met the same fate that most of them did. He was killed by a conspirator who wanted to be the next king. This time it was Hoshea, son of Elah, who would be the last king on the throne of Israel. So Pekah ultimately lost his throne the same way that he had gained it, by assassination. You live by the sword, you die by the sword. Our author cites as a source material, recommended for further reading, the book of the Chronicles of the Kings of Israel, as we have seen done many times previously. I note by way of reminder that this book is no longer extant, so you can't go read it. It is not to be confused with our biblical book of Chronicles, which in fact does not even mention Pekah. Chronicles, you recall, focuses on the kings of Judah, not of Israel. And on that note, we move on to King Jotham, a king of Judah. For him, we have sources in both 2 Kings and 2 Chronicles. His mother was Jerusha, daughter of Zadok. That name Zadok was very common among the priests, so perhaps she was of a priestly line, but that is uncertain. Jotham became king at the age of 25 when his father Uzziah died. This was the second year of Pekah of Israel. That aligns nicely with what we've read elsewhere. He reigned for 16 years until he died at a young 41 years old. Those would be, by my reckoning, the years 197 to 213 since the split. Jotham did right, as Uzziah had done, except Jotham did better than Uzziah in that he did not attempt to enter the temple and did not become a leper. Despite Jotham's good leadership, the people of his kingdom continued to be bad. 2 Kings 15 tells us at verse 35 that the people continued to worship at the high places. Obviously, the high places of perverse worship had been a generational problem. We mentioned last week that the people of Judah had been hard-hearted, ever hearing but never understanding. Even when good leaders were trying to get them to turn from their immoral forms of worship, they weren't listening. The time was approaching when they would lose the opportunity to listen. But for now, Jotham was following God, and as a follower of God, he was growing powerful. Jotham's reign is remembered primarily for his construction projects, and it is preferable to be remembered for the good work of building up in construction rather than for the evil of tearing down in war. Jotham rebuilt a gate to the temple, he built up the city walls, and across the unsettled countryside he built towns and forts and towers to defend them. And yes, amid all the construction, he did also have his share of war. Where Pekah had lived contrary to Jehovah and had losses in war, though, Jotham followed God and God gave him victory. He conquered the Ammonites, Israel and Judah's longtime enemy to the east, and in conquering them, he forced them to pay tribute. They paid him 100 talents of silver, valued, as I write, at about 3.4 million inflatable paper dollars. They also paid 10,000 cores of wheat. That's about 60,000 bushels, or 2.1 million liters, valued at current market prices at around $350,000 to $400,000. And they also paid him barley, 10,000 cores of it. The weight and price of those is comparable to the wheat. Now, obviously, no one wants to pay a tribute or war reparations, but considering what such costs could be, paying only about $4 million to get out of a war really isn't a bad deal. 2 Kings 15:37 also mentions that Jotham defended Judah against attacks from the north. Pekah, king of Israel, made attacks, and so did Rezin, king of Aram. We have no details about how these wars turned out, but based on context, I presume that Jotham was victorious. Then again, kings tend not to make records of their military failures. And that is all that the scriptures tell us about the reign of Jotham. As is common, 2 Chronicles 27:7 notes, as a source, the book of the kings of Israel and Judah. That may refer to our book of Kings, but I'm not certain of that. 2 Kings 15:36 notes that the book of Chronicles of the kings of Judah, which is not to be confused with our book of Chronicles, the Chronicles were compiled long after the books of Kings. And as we would expect, Jotham died and was buried with his ancestors. His son Ahaz succeeded him as king. To conclude, this week we have considered yet another generation of kings. Pekah reigned in Israel and Jotham reigned in Judah during a comparable time frame. Their reigns were not particularly remarkable. Pekah was an evil king, as is expected of the northern kingdom, and Jotham was a good king, as is generally expected of the southern kingdom. The two warred briefly against each other, but the authors of the scriptures didn't even find it necessary to report the outcome. Evil Pekah was attacked by the Assyrians, who conquered a wide swath of his territory, taking the people there as captives. That doesn't bode well for the northern kingdom. Meanwhile, good King Jotham fought the Ammonites, brought home tribute, and emphasized construction projects. Next week, we move on to Jotham's son, Ahaz. For those of you who are listening to this message away from your computer and are looking for more like it, you can find us at eastjordan.church.